continue on from this morning. And we'll try and finish this topic on network technologies and even start on the internet. And then we'll move into details of specific technologies, and there'll be more examples, more tasks for you to do. For today and part of next week, more introductory material. So what we finished on was some examples of DSL or ADSL, which is a very common technology for home users to access the internet. By using the existing telephone line, we don't need to install new cables. We use something that's been there for many years. We can get reasonable speeds of up to 10, 20 megabits per second download, which allows us to do things like have voice calls, download and view video, live video, and web browsing. Of course, the uplink speeds may be a limitation for some applications. For example, if you start talking about high-quality video conferencing, then an uplink speed of 1 and even 3 megabits per second may be a little bit too low. The demonstration I gave you about the ADSL modem at the end of the lecture, you don't need to understand too many details, but just be aware that with an ADSL modem, which some people may have at home, then you can look at some of the communication characteristics, like the uplink and downlink speed, and even the link quality. So let's look at some alternative technologies. We started with dial-up access, the very slow, using the telephone line to improve the speeds, DSL. What if we don't use the telephone line? What alternatives do we have? Well, coaxial cable is one alternative in a number of regions. Cable TV is available in a number of countries where particular companies, cable operators, have deployed their own network of coaxial cable, running specific cables into the home in addition to the telephone line. So separate from the telephone network is a cable network. So usually some private company deploys a cable network across a city, even a country. And that cable network was originally used to deliver TV to the home, cable TV. So it made sense to make use of that cable infrastructure to also access the internet. And that's what cable internet access uses. The coaxial cables, which have been deployed to houses, to homes, most often to an entire neighbourhood, so a line runs down a street and all the houses on that street can attach to that coaxial cable. And it can be used for data access, not just viewing cable TV, but interactive data communications. The coaxial cables in such a system are a shared medium or point-to-multipoint topology. That is, normally the number of the single coaxial cable providing speeds of maybe 30 megabits per second download is shared amongst all of the houses on that street, or perhaps in some small neighbourhood. That is, because it's a point-to-multipoint, you can think there's one link and all of the houses connect into that link. Whereas with ADSL and the copper telephone line systems, every home has its own dedicated point-to-point link to the telephone exchange. My home has a copper cable to the exchange. My neighbour's home has a separate cable to the exchange. With coaxial cable, it's different. Each home connects to the coaxial cable, and that coaxial cable is shared amongst those homes and is fed back into the cable operator's network. So that's a limitation in that the system is shared amongst the users. The more users, the less each individual user gets access to. The more people, the lower the throughput for you, or the lower the data rate for you. This is the name of the standard to allow data communications over the existing cable TV networks, DOCSIS. And there's different variations allowing different speeds. I think this was DOCSIS 1, DOCSIS 2, and there's even DOCSIS 3, which provides data rates up to 100 megabits per second down and up. Most commonly today, where people have cable TV, it's usually DOCSIS 2, up to 30 megabits per second download, 1 megabit per second upload. So it's asymmetric again, like ADSL. Higher speeds, though, except shared. That's okay if there's not many people using the service at the same time as you, because you can get 30 megabits per second down. But if everyone in your neighborhood is subscribed to the cable internet access and all using it heavily, then that means less for you. So this is an alternative which uses something separate from the telephone line. Of course, not as widespread, because not every city has cable TV deployed to all the homes. Most homes in a number of cities will at least have a telephone line or can get access to a telephone line. But the cable for cable TV is an extra cost. To deploy that costs money. Generally faster than ADSL, although it is a shared medium. And it's usually fast enough to use instead of a telephone line. So with ADSL, here's our home, and right, we've got a cable, a copper telephone line, which we pay every month to use. We pay a telecom company to access their copper network, and that goes to a local exchange, telephone exchange. And we can use dial-up for DSL access over that, and we can use, when we use DSL, we can also use our normal telephone, fixed telephone, to make phone calls. So let's say we still have our telephone to an exchange, the copper line, and with cable TV network we have an additional cable which connects to the devices of the cable TV operator. Usually some private company, maybe some government company that deploys their own network through some region, deploying additional cables into your home. So now you have two, your copper telephone line and your coaxial cable TV access. So again, in this case, we can make phone calls, we can watch TV, and we can also have internet access over the coaxial cable system. But of course, you pay for both. You pay for this for your telephone, and you pay for this monthly for your TV and internet access. Coaxial cable, an alternative is to get rid of this. Do not pay for this. You do not get rid of a line. The cable is still there, but you simply do not pay a telecom company for that phone service, and instead connect your phone using voice over IP to use the internet for your telephone access. So that's an alternative that we could do. The cable's still there, but we don't pay a monthly fee for that. So that's, we can avoid paying for the telephone line if we use things like voice over IP, which is a voice call using the internet. Third approach, we have DSL, we have coaxial cable, which uses the cable TV network. Have optical fibre direct to the home. Optical fibre is expensive. The technology is expensive. The equipment that operates or transmits across the links is generally expensive compared to the others, but much faster. We can send data much faster. Usually it's used in core networks, but it can be used to deliver internet access directly into a home, either instead of or as well as the existing cables that come into your home. And often using optical fibre to have internet access to the home is referred to as fibre to the home, because there's a direct optical fibre coming into your home, or fibre to the premise if we're talking about a business, a company, or fibre to the building if we're talking about an apartment building. So you may have fibre into the apartment building and then connect. Each room connects to that optical fibre via Ethernet or wireless LAN. And there are a few others as well. So, again, similar to here, we have our home. We may have our telephone line. to a telephone exchange. And we have an additional cable coming into our home, which is using optical fiber. And that connects to the company that provides our internet access via the optical fiber. Probably there's a router here, and then connects out onto the internet here. And similar to here, we could not pay for this copper line and simply use our optical fiber line for internet access, for telephone calls, and also for TV access. And that's what many countries are moving towards for the next deployment of home internet access. Have a single optical fiber into the home and use that for all three services: telephone service, TV service, watching normal TV, as well as internet access, the third service. And that's desirable because you have only a single network, a single line to maintain and pay for, and therefore can be cheaper in the long term for the end user. But of course, very expensive up front, because someone has to deploy the optical fiber to your home. Not many homes have optical fiber direct to them. And it costs a lot of money to dig holes in the ground and lay cables through a city. That's very expensive. Usually, it uses a point-to-multipoint topology. So often you'll see a single optical fiber into a building and then shared amongst different users, or even to multiple buildings, shared amongst multiple buildings. Typical speeds are of up to 100 megabits per second, and you can get 1 gigabit per second access as well. So some countries now have fiber to the home where you can pay a monthly fee and your access speed is a download speed of 100 megabits per second. In some cases, that's shared between users. But in fact, in some countries, they're having dedicated links where it's not shared anymore. So, compared to the previous approaches of using the telephone line versus using the cable TV, optical fiber, much higher data rates. We can now achieve data rates where we can do high quality or watch high quality TV over the network. That is, watch high definition digital TV via your internet connection, your optical fiber connection. So it supports data, web browsing, voice and video, including digital TV. When we look at the topic of voice and IPTV, we'll go into a few more details about what are the characteristics of digital TV and voice. For example, what's the bandwidth or data rate required to watch standard definition and high definition digital TV via the internet. Major disadvantage, it requires installation of optical fiber, which is not so common in most cities. And that's costly to deploy. A number of countries are deploying networks or planning to deploy the networks. In Australia, the government recently agreed upon deploying a network across the entire country, and they estimate the cost to be $40 billion, which is, I don't know, one times that by 30 is 1 trillion baht, 1,000 billion baht, just to deploy the network. So it's very expensive to deploy across a large area. But once it's there, it should be able to provide many services for a long time. So they are some of the wired access technologies which are common. Using your telephone line, using your cable TV network, or using optical fiber. And of course, the first thing we spoke about, all of those can also combine with Ethernet. That is, my ADSL link, we haven't really mentioned it, here all of these provide really into the house, access to the house or the home. Inside the house, we may use wireless LAN or Ethernet to send the data to individual computers inside the house. So we have Ethernet, dial-up, DSL, coaxial cable, and optical fiber. Just four technologies that are used for wired access. What about this part of the network? What's happening in here and from the exchange beyond to the rest of the internet? So we can think of these as the access networks, the technologies for providing individual users access to the internet. But what about the technologies used by the internet service providers and the telecom companies which connect between cities and so on? What technologies are available? Well, we'll look at several, some of them quite quickly. We have existing telephone networks. As we've said, telephone networks have been around for almost 100 years. So across the world, there are cables deployed, initially based upon copper, also optical fiber, between cities, between countries, under the ocean and so on, that connect core networks together. So in telephone-based systems, there are different networking technologies, packet switch networks. These are typically circuit switch technologies. There's some different packet switching technologies, which leads to the or IP networks, which are commonly used. And we can also use wireless networks like satellite and different microwave, which we'll cover later. We'll look a little bit about these, quickly mention these. We understand how IP works already, so we won't touch upon that. And at the end, we'll cover wireless networks. So telephone networks have been built for telephone calls, and that's how they were designed, to carry telephone calls across countries, between countries and so on. But it makes sense to make use of that existing infrastructure to also use it for internet access, for data communications. So they are originally designed for telephone carrying voice calls, but extended to carry not just voice, but video, web browsing and so on. A voice call, we've always said that a voice call or voice communications uses about 4 kilohertz of bandwidth. Using Nyquist theorem, using pulse code modulation, if you take 8,000 samples per second, 8 bits per sample, that's equivalent to requiring one voice call needs 64 kilobits per second to transfer your voice in an efficient and clear manner. So in analog communications, we need a bandwidth of 4 kilohertz to talk over a communication system. When we're talking about sending it as bits, sending your voice as bits, we need approximately 64 kilobits per second to clearly communicate over a communication system using voice. And many of the technologies based on the existing telephone network use this base number of 64 kilobits per second to develop the faster speeds. We'll see that in a moment. Let's look at some examples. Plesiochronous digital hierarchy, PDH. PDH. This is a technology that telecom operators use inside their networks to connect between office buildings and between cities, and even over the past between countries. We're not going to go into detail of how it works. It's a circuit switching technology. It's quite old now. The links use copper lines, so it's still using copper cables. So there may be cables between Bangkok and Chiang Mai using copper links and using the technology called PDH. It offers different speeds, and they're all based upon this original 64 kilobits per second single voice call speed, because they were built to carry voice calls. From Bangkok to Chiang Mai, if we have one cable, it needs to be able to carry many people making voice calls at the same time. So these technologies were built around this base. One voice call is 64 kilobits per second. So if I need to carry 24 voice calls at the same time, I need 1.5 or approximately 1.5 megabits per second, and there's a particular standard which says, which calls that as a T1 standard, which says a T1 line can carry 24 voice calls or approximately 1.5 megabits per second of data. The different standards were different in different parts of the world. In the US, they were referred to as T, or the T hierarchy. In Europe, the E hierarchy. And in fact, that's what's been used in Thailand as well. Similar technologies, but just different, slightly different numbers. You see, the base level for the European one is 30 voice calls or voice circuits, about 2 megabits per second. The base for the US, 1.5. And they scale up. That is, 4 E1s is equivalent to 1 E2 line, which carries either 120 voice calls or, in terms of data, 8.5 megabits per second. So how this may be used, let's say we have the Rungsit campus for Thammasat, the university. We have us. And we have in the city TU, and there's some other campuses around Bangkok area. And we want to connect these campuses together. Then what an option we have is to go to a telecom company which has cables and infrastructure all across Bangkok and say, okay, between Rungsit and Bangkati, we need, in terms of data, we need a line. And we need, let's say, 1 megabit per second. All right, that's a little bit low for now. But let's say we want to be able to send at a maximum of 1 megabit per second between these two campuses. Then we'd go to a telecom company and say, okay, we need to send 1 megabit per second. And we need to, if we ignore the T hierarchy and just look at the European standards, we'd like to lease or rent an E1 line at some rate, 10,000 baht per month, for example. And that telecom company, the cables between the two campuses, they would provide us with some equipment that we put in this campus, a special switching device, and another in the other campus, and we would use their network that connects the two campuses together. And that would provide us with exactly, in this case, 2.048 megabits per second between those two campuses. If we want into the city, if we need 10 megabits per second, we'd either get an E3, which may be too much, or we could get a combination of lines, an E2 and an E1, which would provide us more than 10 megabits per second. So we could have two different lines to connect, or we could go up to the higher E3 as a way for planning for the future, in the fact that we may expect in the next several years we'd get more than 10 megabits per second. So these are what's called leased digital circuits. That is, you go to a company and you rent or lease them for some amount per month, and they provide the link between the two locations at a particular data rate using this technology PDH at one of the levels that are available. And in fact, there are other levels, or more further levels. Well, I think there's an E5. So this is a leased circuit that companies use to connect their campuses, connect their offices, and we can also connect between cities and even between countries. They all use copper lines, copper networks, and many telecom companies have the copper infrastructure already deployed across countries and across cities. So you can simply go to them and pay the right amount of money. They'll give you the equipment, put in your home, and you can get that access between two locations. One example of how companies connect across a city, between cities, so on. But quite slow for now, for today's standards. In fact, between our campus now, we have, I think, at least 20 megabits per second between these two campuses, even more. So, use an E3, but because they're using copper lines, when you want to connect across a city or between two cities, then you need much more than 140 megabits per second. We're talking about gigabits per second to connect between cities. So the next evolution of PDH, say the improvement, was SDH, Synchronous Digital Hierarchy. We're not going to explain the differences or how they work, but the main point, SDH now uses optical fiber. So the cables connecting the two locations are using optical fiber instead of copper lines and can go much faster. And the set of standards, again, there were different ones for Europe and called international, called SDH, and the US, that was called SONET. Again, in Thailand, we use SDH. And there are different names, for again, for the levels. STS1 and so on. Because we're using optical fiber, you'll also see some level, the optical carrier and the data rate. 51 megabits per second is the base, 155 megabits per second, 620, 2.5 gigabits per second, 13 gigabits per second. So now much faster data rates because we've made the shift to optical fiber. And this technology is now commonly used for connecting around cities or across cities, between cities and between countries. Many of the submarine links between countries use SDH or SONET, depending on the country, and at data rates in this range. Not something you pay to connect your home, but what companies and maybe telecom companies and internet service providers pay to connect between cities. And all of their users using their access networks connect and use one of those core network technologies. As an example, many internet service providers give maps of their networks. This is although it's a US internet service provider, it's only use it because it's got a lot of data to show us. Here's a map of the internet service provider QWest. So they are an ISP in the US. In fact, they have infrastructure across the world. So there's a map of the US and the different cities, and we'll zoom in a moment, but it's showing the different links that this company has between the different cities across the US. So it has a link here, these links, and links all the way across the continent. Just zoom in, what do some of those links mean? We can see that the white ones, the white links, OC192. So on the slides, what's the data rate of that? OC192. Is it on there? 10 gigabits per second. So the white links here, this company has optical fibers between these two cities and can transfer at 10 gigabits per second. And then OC48, which is what, 2.5 gigabits per second, I think, and the lower levels down to this DS3, in fact, is one of the PDH technologies, the older copper technologies, which it has wherever there are black links. So this is an internet service provider's own network. They own the cables across the country at different speeds depending upon the demands from the different users. So the subscribers to the ISP in Phoenix would use perhaps DSL to connect using their telephone line into the ISP's own network in Phoenix via a telephone exchange to some network operations center. And if they want to communicate with someone in LA, then their data would travel across this link. And that supports, in this case, 10 gigabits per second. So The technologies of PDH and especially today SDH are used by ISPs to connect across countries and so on. And in some cases, even inside cities, around a city. One more, and you can. The link to this image is available on the website. You can explore some. You can see there are many 10 gigabit per second links in the East Coast of the US. One more example, closer to home. It doesn't have as much detail. Actually, it doesn't have any detail. Or it's difficult to see the detail. This is True, the ISP. And True, the company, has a gateway that connects all of its customers in Thailand to the rest of the world. And it's harder to see the detail on this one, but it's showing some of the links. Sorry, some of the links it has. Try again. Some of the links that it has to the different countries or the different ISPs in different parts of the world. So links into Singapore, which provide access to different ISPs in Singapore. And here's the data rates. Here we're talking about 4 gigabits per second, 1 gigabit per second. It may be using SDH in this case. We can't be sure, but most likely. Depends on the data rate. And links to different companies inside Singapore as well. So SDH is especially used by ISPs to connect between countries. What else do we have? So they are circuit switching technology. You can think of the physical layer, the links using PDH or SDH. We can also form networks across cities and between cities. And there are different packet switching technologies. And they've developed in, over the last 30 years, starting from things like X25, technologies like frame relay, which were improvements and not to do with money, asynchronous transfer mode, ATM. These are packet switching technologies, in all cases using virtual circuit packet switching, where, again, a company like True, which has a network across Thailand, may create a packet switching network across the entire country using their PDH and SDH links, but using one of these technologies, most likely ATM. We're not going to go into any detail of them. X25 is very old. It provided speeds of up to 64 kilobits per second. That's how old it is. So 64 kilobits per second between cities is nowhere near fast enough for today. Frame relay was an improvement, providing speeds extended up to 44 megabits per second. Again, nothing compared to optical fibre, but still may be used in older networks. Places like banks. A bank has many branches across a country and many ATMs, which dispense cash, not ATM as we've got up here. And they need to be all connected together via a network. And packet switching networks, X25 originally, frame relay and even ATM, common network technology to connect the different ATMs and banks and branches of banks. Because they don't need a high data rate, they have their own network using these older technologies. And as an example, maybe this is our campus here. We have a router. As an alternative to buying or paying a monthly price for this leased line between the two campuses, another option would be to pay an ISP or a telecom company for access via their frame relay network. This is a switched network where these are switches. They may have their own switched network across Bangkok. We would pay them to use their network to send our data to the rest of the internet. That's an alternative. We'll send our data to the other campus. And maybe the more common one in use today is ATM in terms of asynchronous transfer mode. Data rates up to 600 megabits per second. So that's more typical for today's communications across cities. So without going into any detail of how it works, just mentioning the names so you're aware, at least when you hear these names in real life, then you can at least connect them. Okay, this is a technology that an ISP or a telecom company may use across a city. So asynchronous transfer mode is commonly used today within the ISP's own network, across cities, between cities, used in mobile telephone networks. All the base stations in a mobile telephone network often are connected together via one network using ATM. There was, in fact, even ATM local area networks, but Ethernet became the dominant technology. ATM LANs never eventuated. So there are some of the other alternatives for connecting across cities. Just some, when we're talking about these different technologies, PDH and SDH, we can think of them as at the physical layer, using circuit switching. X25 actually provided mechanisms at the network, data link, and physical layer. ATM sort of overlaps the network and data link layer. And in fact, they can be combined. ATM uses SDH as a physical layer, or can run over SDH. You need a whole course if you want to go and understand how they work. We're not going to attempt to do that. So in summary, wired core networks as opposed to access networks. We have circuit switching techniques, PDH, SDH, packet switching techniques. Some of them are X25, frame relay, ATM, pure IP networks. And they can be combined, and they often are. Your quiz will ask questions such as, not now, your quiz, if you had a quiz today, it would ask questions such as, not how the technologies work, but comparing them, or knowing that at least that ATM is commonly used for a wired core network as opposed to a wireless technology. ATM is not a wireless technology. It's just simple things like that. Or SDH and PDH is not an access technology. You don't pay someone for an SDH link into your home. It's a core network technology. And that maybe that SDH is an improvement upon PDH. So those are the types of things that you should know, not how they work. In fact, I won't even ask you to remember the exact definitions of them. Just try to pick up on the acronyms, the names, and the relationship between them. Now we want to look at wireless networks. As I said this morning, we'll take attendance. And the attendance is because if no one attends, it's going to be with just 20 people here, if 5 people don't attend, it's going to be a very quiet lecture, which is not fun. So I want everyone to come. Therefore, you get points for participation. If you miss some lectures, that'll be okay. But if you start to miss several, 3, 4 lectures, you'll start to lose points. The current rule is if you miss more than 2 lectures, you'll lose points. I may extend that to be more than 2, but at this stage it's 2. So try to come. wireless network technologies. What's good about wireless? We've already mentioned before, wired versus wireless. Wired is good because we control the signal in wired communications. What's good about wireless? There are no wires. We're untethered. We're not connected to something. That means we can move around. We have mobility of users and devices. Untethered, no wires. Even if we don't have mobility, we have things like quick installation. We don't have to deploy and maintain cables, which can be expensive. My laptop's not mobile in terms of I don't walk around with it using it. It's nomadic in terms of I pick it up, put it down, it's fixed in that one position as I use it. But it's still using wireless communications because it's much easier than plugging in a cable. So it's not just mobility, it's also the convenience of using wireless. But there are many challenges that make using wireless a problem compared to using wired communications. The communications channel when we send our signals via wireless is not as good as when we use wired techniques, not as robust. There are more errors, and if we have errors, we'll lose data. If we lose data, we'll have to retransmit that data, and that will lead to less throughput. From the user's perspective, I want to get data from source to destination as fast as possible. The more errors, the slower we can transfer data. There may be higher delays in some wireless technologies. Satellite is an extreme example. Satellite communications, we may have delays of 200, almost 300 milliseconds just to send a signal up to the satellite. So we cannot avoid that. And with higher delays, we may result in less throughput because we have to wait for timeouts before we retransmit. If we lose data, we have to wait a long time, which reduces throughput. What's worse, the conditions vary over time, especially when you're mobile. If you think of a mobile phone, which is using wireless communications, at this position, I'm some distance from the base station, with some characteristics of the environment. That is, there's some interference from the people nearby and from the walls and so on of my signal. If I move 10 metres in that direction, the environment's different. I'm a different distance from the base station and there's different levels of interference. So as we move, the conditions change and we need to deal with that. It means the performance of our communication may go up and down. What else is difficult? The radio spectrum is limited. That is, the set of frequencies that we have available, the set of frequencies, you can still hear me, we have available to use is limited. If we want to send faster, we cannot just add more wires. If I wanted to, let's say to communicate between one computer and another, I can plug in an Ethernet cable and send it 100 megabits per second. If I wanted to send it 200 megabits per second, I've got the option of plugging in two cables. I could do that. It's very easy and it would work. But with wireless LAN, I cannot add more wireless transmitters because they'll interfere with each other. The two cables will not interfere with each other because the signals across the cables are protected. With wireless, I cannot add more transmitters or receivers. I cannot add more frequency because the set of frequencies we have is limited and in most cases licensed. I have to use the one frequency that is made available to me, licensed to me. So to get more speed, we cannot add more frequencies because we have a limited amount of spectrum. And we have some rules as to who can use which frequencies. Some protocols and applications are designed assuming a perfect link. You send data and it assumes there won't be any errors. But that doesn't work well when we have wireless links when there are errors. So wires. Because for someone else, for some malicious person to see my transmissions, they'd have to get physical access to those cables, which are inside the building. But with wireless, my signal goes everywhere. So someone sitting in the car park outside can potentially hear my signals, and that's a problem with security. So we need extra network security for it to work well. You've seen this. Make sure you remember it. Just change the battery. Our simple model of wireless transmission. We have a transmitter and a receiver. We have an antenna at the transmitter. We generate a signal at some power level. So the height of the signal that we generate at the transmitter is related to the power that we transmit at. So we transmit at power PT. That signal goes towards the receiver and it loses power over distance. It attenuates. It gets weaker over distance, so it's received with some power level, and that received power level needs to be greater than some threshold, some level which the receiver is designed to be able to understand. If it's not greater than that threshold, we can assume the receiver cannot understand what was sent. If someone talks, or if I talk without the microphone, it's much harder to hear and understand what I say. When I talk with a higher power level, then it's easier to hear and understand. And we know about relationships between these factors. Also, the fact that the antenna size impacts on power. Larger antenna amplifies the power that's transmitted at both the transmitter, and a larger antenna at the receiver amplifies the received power strength. And the larger the distance, the more the signal attenuates, the weaker it gets. We've seen the free space path loss equation, which relates these in some mathematical equation, that where we can calculate, if we know the distance, the transmit power, and the frequency, we can calculate how much power is lost across some distance. So the amount of power lost, it depends upon the distance, how far, the frequency, the size of the antenna, both at the transmitter and receiver, the directionality of the antenna. We've said you should understand that if an antenna is highly directional, that is, it focuses its energy in one direction, will transmit further than if it spreads the energy all around. And, of course, obstructions. Obstructions between the transmitter and receiver may impair the signal, so that what arrives at the receiver is much weaker. Obstructions such as buildings, people, furniture, and so on, and even environmental effects. The way that we encode the bits, because we want to send zeros and ones over our wireless channel into some signal that we send, and the way that we decode it at the receiver impacts upon the data rate, the speed at which we can send bits. A receiver can normally understand or decode a received signal if its received power level is above some threshold. If it's too weak, we cannot understand it. That's our very simple model of the wireless transmission. But we can make it even simpler. Often, since we're IT people, we care about these factors. We care about the transmit power, the range, how far we can go, the data rate, the speed at which we can send data, the frequency that we're using are the main factors, and the other factor is cost. So when we buy or design networks and we buy equipment, they're the main factors we care about. As IT people, if I need to go and buy equipment to build my own network, I would like to evaluate that equipment and my design based on these factors. I want to send data fast.
Normally, users want to transmit their data as fast as possible. So we care about the data rate, measured in bits per second. But there's a trade-off between the other factors. We care about transmission range. Because if I want to provide wireless coverage across an entire campus, it would be the cheapest option would be to have one special access point in the middle of the campus which transmits for a range and covers 2 kilometres around it. So everyone within 2 kilometres of that transmitter would receive the signal. So if we had a range of 2 kilometres, we'd just need one transmitter and that would cover, say, all the laptops within that range. But if our range is only 20 metres, that means to cover this entire campus, I need one transmitter or one access point outside this room to cover this room, another one down the end of the corridor to cover the lecture room down there, and then several on each floor just in this building. I would need many different base stations, access points, or wireless transmitters to get coverage across the same area. So a smaller transmission range will mean we need many more devices to communicate across the same total area, which could increase the cost. But a larger transmission range normally requires particular frequencies and high transmit power. And we are interested in selecting an appropriate frequency and lowering the transmit power. Why do we care about transmit power? Our mobile devices rely on batteries. The more transmit power of our wireless signal, the faster we're going to consume our battery. So if you think of your laptop or your mobile phone, if you transmit at a very high power, or you transmit many times, then your battery will be consumed much faster than if you transmit at a low power. Therefore, I'd like to choose a technology that has a high data rate, that can transmit along across a large distance, which has a low transmit power. These two are conflicting, so that's a trade-off we need to consider. Frequency. Why do we care about frequency? Because there's a cost associated with frequencies that we use. That is, I would like to choose a technology that operates at a particular frequency. Wireless LAN that we commonly use uses a frequency of, and you studied this in maybe one of your assignments, you may have seen it, 2.4 gigahertz. That's the center or the nominal frequency used by wireless LAN. And this frequency is in the band called the ISM band, industrial, scientific and medical purposes. This is a set of frequencies that are free to use. Anyone can use this frequency without paying a license. It's reserved for particular uses, and that's the name come for companies, for scientific purposes, for medical purposes, and now commonly used for wireless LAN. But if a lot of people use this free frequency, then we can interfere with each other. And you can start to see that with wireless LAN. If you go into the middle of Bangkok, very highly populated area of many companies, and turn on your laptop, you'll see many different wireless access points, many different networks. So if everyone's using them, they'll interfere with each other because they're all using the same frequency. The more people using this frequency, the more interference. The more interference, the lower our data rate. So again, we have conflicts. If we want to use this free frequency, we have to compete with other people who also want to use it. So that's a problem. Other frequencies are not free. You need to go to a government organisation and pay a licence. And the 3G mobile phone technologies are an example there. That there was an attempt in Thailand to have an auction to sell or to rent access to frequencies used by the next generation of mobile phones. And these frequencies were what? I think 2.1 gigahertz or 2 gigahertz. I think 2.1 gigahertz was the
approximate range of the frequencies. They were trying to sell one frequency in this range for 12 billion baht. It's not free. So you want to choose a frequency wisely because they cost money. If it doesn't cost money, then you're going to have to deal with interference with other users. In this case, if you pay your 12 billion baht and get that frequency, you don't interfere with anyone else because no one else is allowed to use that frequency. It's yours. But of course that costs money. So we care about which frequency we use. When I say frequency, in fact it's a range of frequencies centered around 2.4 or 2.1 gigahertz. Maybe tens of megahertz. And of course, the last thing we care about when we want to design and build a network is the cost. I want to choose a technology that has high speed, large range, uses a good frequency, one that is low cost, doesn't interfere with anyone. I have low transmit power, so I have long battery life, and I want it to be cheap. So there are many conflicting requirements there. And when we evaluate different wireless technologies, they are the main things we consider. Do we need to say a little bit more about frequencies? All right. So we transmit a signal at some frequency with some bandwidth. So in fact, we don't send at one exact frequency, we send at a range of frequencies. Can we illustrate that? So this is the center frequency of 2.4 gigahertz. If I say my wireless LAN transmits at 2.4 gigahertz, in fact it doesn't transmit just at this frequency, it transmits at frequencies around that. Plus or minus, and I think with wireless LAN, the bandwidth here is about a total of 80 megahertz, maybe more. But it's about 2.4 gigahertz. We actually transmit at multiple frequencies in that range. Why do we care? Why do we care about frequency? Data rate. With higher frequencies, we normally have larger bandwidths available to us. The larger the bandwidth, the higher the data rate. So, because bandwidth, we've seen from Nyquist and Shannon's theorem, relates to data rate, the bits per second. So normally, the larger the bandwidth, the larger the frequency, the faster we can send. So we'd like a high frequency. But high frequency leads to shorter range. Here's our conflict. Normally, higher frequencies cannot transmit as far as low frequencies. Look at the free space path loss equation and you'll see that frequency is in there, as is distance. And you'll find that if you increase frequency, the distance will go down for the same conditions. Also, different frequencies are affected by obstacles in different ways. And the easiest example is your infrared remote control of your TV. It will not work through walls very well because that infrared frequency is obstructed by walls or the material inside walls. My wireless LAN will work through walls, okay, because the access point I'm transmitting to is out in the corridor because that's at a different frequency and is affected in a different way. Some frequencies are affected by rain, satellite transmissions in some cases. If it's raining, your satellite TV may not be as good quality as when it's not raining. So we need to consider that if we're choosing a frequency. Interference, we've mentioned, if many people and technologies are using the same frequency, like a free ISM 2.4 gigahertz, if everyone's using it in the same area, you'll interfere with each other. Not just the same technologies, you put your wireless LAN transmitter, your laptop, near some cordless home phones, they'll interfere. Microwave ovens apparently interfere. Microwave ovens use the same frequency. If you put your laptop very close to a microwave oven and turned on the oven, it may interfere with each other. And of course, the cost. Because the range of frequencies, the spectrum is limited, it's managed by national and international organizations. Some are free to use, which we've mentioned, within some rules. Some you need a license to use. This is an old case. When in Europe they deployed 3G, and that was maybe more than 10 years ago, in Germany companies paid something like, 2 trillion baht for a license. They lost a lot of money. Here we were trying to sell the license for 12 billion baht, which is a little bit more realistic. But frequencies cost money if you don't want to have to compete with others. So we do care about the frequency. I think most of you have seen this before. Some technologies, the spectrum available up to visible light, we have optical fiber, coaxial cable, the lower frequencies. We have FM radio and TV, satellite transmission. You can look at that in your own time, the spectrum available for transmission. Before we look at specific wireless technologies, if we get time today, another aspect concerned about wireless transmission is the topology, whether we use point-to-point or point-to-multipoint. And the difference is the directionality of our antennas. With a highly directional antenna, we get point-to-point communications. With a omnidirectional antenna, an antenna that transmits signals in all directions, we say that's point-to-multipoint, or we can achieve point-to-multipoint communications. We have on the top of the other building what's called a WiMAX link to the Rungsit campus. So there's an antenna on top of the other building pointing towards an antenna on top of a building in Rungsit. And these antennas are very directional, or highly directional. They essentially create a point-to-point link. The signal is concentrated in one direction. If the antennas were not pointed at each other, they would not be able to communicate. So if they were misaligned somehow, they would not be able to communicate. The good thing about point-to-point communications with wireless is that you don't cause interference on people outside of the range of the signal. So if you focus the antenna in this direction, you're not going to interfere with anyone behind you or even around you. With point-to-multipoint, or what's often referred to as broadcast radio, we broadcast a signal to everyone around us, not just in a two-dimensional, but three-dimensional all around us, so that anyone within range of that signal can receive it. And that's why even if there's a wireless access point downstairs, my laptop may be able to communicate with it if there's not so many obstructions, because wireless LAN uses broadcast radio or point-to-multipoint. We send our signal everywhere. Anyone within range will receive that signal. That's good because it's very easy. You don't have to set up your antennas. I don't have to place my laptop in a particular direction to get a good transmission. I just put it anywhere and I don't need to point it towards the access point. It's bad because we'll interfere with many different users. Short-range wireless communication. So now we're going to go through, and I think we'll just go through the first two today. We'll go through the rest next week. Different technologies. List some of the technologies and evaluate them quickly for some of the characteristics we just spoke about, like frequency, data rate, power, and range. Not so much of cost.
Firstly, the short-range wireless communication technologies. By short, we're talking about range of centimetres, several metres, maybe up to 10 metres. There are different technologies built for this purpose. Some examples: Bluetooth, infrared, Zigbee, you may have or you've heard of from the assignment and then others, other topics. Others like ultra wideband. These are technologies and standards for short range wireless communications. What would we use them for? Connect different electronic devices together. Have a wireless desktop. Right, you can do that. You can buy a wireless keyboard, wireless mouse. It'd be nice to have a wireless monitor. You don't have cables. You don't need it for mobility, but for convenience. Without any cables on your desktop, that would be nice. Connecting around you. We talk about body area networks or personal area networks. All the devices you carry on you, maybe your watch, your camera, your mobile phone, other devices, your headset, your MP3 player, if they're not all in one, then they can communicate with each other. And especially nowadays in automation, automating things, not so much involving humans, but automating devices and control of devices. Lights, automating the control of the lights, of the air conditioners, machinery in a factory, use wireless communications to control them, hospitals and so on. So there are many aspects where we can use short-range wireless communications to control things in a home, in a factory environment, or a hospital environment. Some of those four technologies: Bluetooth, Zigbee, ultra-wideband, infrared. This is the standard for infrared communications. They use different frequencies in some cases. Bluetooth and Zigbee use the free 2.4 gigahertz, the same one that your laptop wireless LAN uses. Ultra wideband means very wideband and therefore uses very high frequencies, 3 to 10 gigahertz, so higher frequencies. Infrared, we're using 350 terahertz. That's in the visible light spectrum, getting close to. The data rates of these are normally much lower than others that we see, like wireless LAN. Bluetooth, several megabits per second. There are extensions to go higher. Zigbee is not trying to be fast. It's trying to be low power. So it compromises of having very low data rates. It's used for applications where you don't need to transfer files fastly. You just need to send occasional messages. Maybe your electricity meter in your home needs to send messages once per hour to other devices in your home. Then we don't need high data rates, but we'd like very low power consumption, so we can have a battery that lasts for a long time without changing it, for weeks, for months. Some other, I guess, similar: infrared, low data rates, low power. The range given here, around 10 metres, tens of metres in some cases, less than metres in some cases. The costs of those devices, well, normally once once they start to be manufactured on a large scale, we're talking about, what, tens of baht for different chips that implement these devices. Maybe today you talk about hundreds, and maybe some of the research thousands of baht, but eventually if they're manufactured on a large scale, maybe tens, maybe 100 baht for such devices. They're supposed to be very cheap, because they're supposed to be included in consumer products, and many different products. That's the idea, at least. Wireless LAN is a topic actually the next topic we're going to cover, and we're going to go through in a lot of detail of how it works. So just briefly mentioned here. Here we're talking about a larger range, hundreds of meters. IEEE 802.11 is the standard, or the set of standards, for wireless LANs, and there are different standards that have been developed over time.
Main purpose, home, office, local area network connectivity. And it's typically used in a point-to-multipoint topology. You transmit everywhere. And some of the technologies giving speeds of tens of megabits per second, maybe up to hundreds of megabits per second. And the range is tens of meters up to maybe 100 meters, slightly less for the newer technologies. The main frequency, or the most popular frequency, is the free 2.4 gigahertz, but some of the wireless LAN standards also allow 5 gigahertz. What's good about that is that not many people use it, and there's not much interference, at least for now. What's bad about it is that the devices are not compatible with those using 2.4 gigahertz. And it has different characteristics in terms of transmission. Usually transmit at a less range, a lower range. But we'll cover wireless LAN in more detail in one specific topic. And I'm going to stop there. That's the place to stop. We're going to go through the rest and move on to the internet in the next topic on, or in the next lecture next week. So make sure you have a look at the website. Make sure you're aware that you should come to the lectures. You'll lose marks if you start not coming to the lectures. That we're going to have some exams. We're going to have one assignment. There are no assessed quizzes, but like I said, with the lectures, you may get marks for participation. So if I do give a question, you may lose marks if you don't attempt that question. But there's no formal quizzes, but I may give you tasks in lectures to do. They won't be difficult, and you may not get the correct answer, but you still could get marks for participation. So come to the lectures. And let's continue next week.